Good morning, y'all. This is IT Live, brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Tex Homer. This is Paul Wadlington. We're going to be talking spring football today. Unfortunately, Ryan Wingo went down, and we're also down DeAndre Moore, so we're going to talk about how the wide receiver room is going to have to reshuffle during the spring. We have Bailey coming in from Stanford for a visit, so kind of talking about that, but also just talking about, you know, adding another edge to an already really good pass-rushing team. And then, of course, guys, your comments, your thoughts, your beliefs. We will be discussing as well. Hi, Sandman.
I got to start off with an old man yelling at clouds moment. Do you have a moment for a diatribe, Connor?
Yeah, sure.
We got to fill an hour either way, man.
Yep, go for it.
All right. I'm officially an old man because I went to Sports Cuts or Sports Clips, whatever it's called, the chain. Like, don't you feel like those haircuts were $12 about a minute ago?
Dude, I got a story last night from a CC's where I had the same revelation. So what's
okay? So I get a haircut. She's like, "Do you want the triple blah blah blah?" Where like I shampoo your hair after and give you a shoulder massage. I'm like, "Hell yeah!" So we do that. I give them a nice tip. I always tip well. Got to keep those girls happy, employed, off of the pole. And so it's $48, Connor.
Yeah.
The services, the haircut, and all that was $38. I tipped 10. Yeah. I paid $48 for a haircut, and I didn't go to a Beverly Hills salon and get highlights. What am I just old and completely out of touch? Did I just realize prices went up? Or I just feel like when you went to like a Supercuts, it was like $14 yesterday, and now it's not. Am I completely off?
No, I literally the same thing last night. I went to CeCe's because I'm a man of class. And I went there, and I remember, you know, it being like $5 for the buffet, you know. And of course, I was in high school, but still, in my mind, it's eternally $5. And it was like $15 for a CeCe's buffet, and I was like, "What is going on, man?" So no, it's funny that we both had the same realization yesterday of just like, well, why is everything getting so expensive, man?
Truly, old man moment back in the day. Conan's on campus. Conan's on the drag. Used to have $5 buffets at noon at lunch.
Yeah.
And I would go in there and eat like three salads, you know, nine pieces of pizza. And I'd jam like one piece of pizza wrapped in a napkin in my backpack as I left. And that would be my meal for the day. Like when I was a young, poor student. Yeah. $5, man. I got my veggies. I got my pizza. You know, your pizza food group. You got to get the pizza food group.
Important in college, yeah.
So I'm an old man yelling at clouds. I sound like my dad who I remember one time, like I had high water jeans. Like I was getting people be like, "Where's the flood?" when I was at school. Cause my jeans were up on my ankles. Right. And I could barely get in them. And I'm like, "Hey dad, I need to buy three pairs of new jeans for high school." And my dad's like, "Sure." And he gave me $10. I was just like, yeah. And I was like, Levi's jeans, you know, 501s, whatever it was, or like back then it was like $28.
Yeah,
he's like, $28 for jeans, and then he gave me a lecture on what jeans are, and they're there for work, and this shouldn't even be a fashion thing. Yeah. You should be wearing pants, and I was just like, oh god.
Dude, it's I was listening to a thing from Warren Buffett, very different people.
Yes, very different.
Warren Buffett yesterday, where he was talking about, you know, when people buy houses for like $20,000, and it's like, oh no, he thinks we're buying houses for $20,000. This dude runs real estate. I was like, dude, but that's how I felt.
My first house in Omaha was $17,300.
That's what, but when I went to CeCe's, that's how I felt. I was like, these buffets are $5. What is going on
here? This is outrageous.
It was crazy.
All right. Well, I had to get that off. I appreciate y'all indulging the old man rant.
Well, the tough part with inflation is the businesses never bring them back down.
Well, that's the inherent issue.
Yeah, so like inflation goes down, but it sticks no matter what. And so,
pure pricing that's elastic, like gasoline, can go up and down, right?
Right.
But food or a restaurant, they're not redoing their menu when prices come back down. For you know, like suddenly your Thai curry is still $29.95 when it used to be $14.95, and then it ain't going back. So anyway. Yeah.
Well, people feel very strongly about that, and they feel very strongly about their choice of pizza buffet. He said, "CeCe's, I hope your plumbing is up to standard." Well, it was fun trying to convince my wife to go to CeCe's because she did not want to go to CeCe's. I was able to win out in the end. No, because I haven't been there in years.
Oh, she wanted to go to Long John Silver's.
The funniest part is we did pass Long John Silver's. I was like, "Do you even like Long John Silver?" She's like, "Yeah." All right, football or whatever. This is a football show, I guess. Mr. Gaddy's Buffet was so good. Yep, they screwed it up. Pizza Inn also solid. Whole Foods pizza actually dope. We met. Here's a Sandman's in a different tax bracket when it comes to pizzas.
Here. Whole Foods, well, Mr. Sandman, la di da.
All right, Ryan Wingo goes down. Light hamstring injury. Shout out Justin Wells for reporting that. It's not major, but hamstrings are weird and tweaky, and Sark is already kind of hyper aware of overusing guys with a long season. So Wingo's going to sit for the remainder of spring, the next 3 weeks or so, right? And then we already have DeAndre Moore, who also, similar thing, is out for the spring in the slot. So we know we've been hearing good things about Parker Livingstone. And he was opposite Ryan Wingo. Now that Wingo goes down, he'll likely move over to Wingo's spot, and then we probably get Aaron Butler where Parker Livingstone was. So it's not great for Wingo because, Paul, how do you feel about it, right? To me, Wingo's nowhere near a finished product. Like the spring would have been very helpful for him, you know?
He could have used the development time, but it's going to be okay. And he'll still get that in the offseason working with Arch, and he'll also get it in the fall practices. The bigger issue is I guarantee you they could rehab him and tape it up and give him some support, like put a little sleeve on it, and he could go out and practice. But why? And the thing about hamstrings is little tears often become big tears because he's a competitor and someone's going to challenge him and he's going to try to stride out something and he's going to like rip it off the bone. So like, don't even give him the chance, shut him down. And this is a great opportunity to really find out and kick the tires on Livingstone, on Butler, figure out what we've got and get those freshmen in there, get Lockett integrated, get French integrated. We already are getting good, good vibes on McCutcheon. So like, hey, let's roll these guys out and put the burden on them and tell them, hey, you got to step up. And I think it's a great developmental opportunity for them. So, you know, one opportunity shuts down one area, it opens up others. And I think it will give us a great sorting of those guys on the depth chart. And then also there's an element of minimum acceptable play to get you on the field. And so it's not just that we're making a depth chart for the coaches of like who's starting, who's doing this. They're trying to say, is Lockett right now a guy we can put out there and feel okay with, even if he's third on the depth chart? Like, can we put him in a rotation? Or we like his future, he ain't ready for prime time. And based on that information, that's going to influence what we do in the transfer portal.
Yeah. It's that's the silver lining, right? The Wingo thing is not great. You want him to get reps. But on the flip side now, you get to see what's up with Aaron Butler. We've heard a good thing about French after the catch. Eric's reported that French does some great stuff after the catch. And he had a note on Kalik as well. And like we said, we already talked about McCutcheon. So, and Michael Terry's also now moved into the slot. So we're hearing good returns. Freddie DeBose is no longer on the roster, right? So we've lost that level of wide receiver depth. But it's we're hearing good things about all the players. So in a weird way, unfortunately, with two of our starters out, which is not ideal, you're still getting some benefits here. You're getting to see who can play, and they're getting real reps. But, man, I wanted Wingo to get some more work with Arch. That would have been cooler. Let's see. Injuries are scary, something I've come to learn. Texas recruits so that you can perform, not ride the bench. Wide receiver is a position that Texas has done well with. Trust those next guys up. Got no other choice.
No other choice, and it'll be good. It'll be good for the development. So we'll sort some stuff out. I still think we're taking a spring receiver. It's funny. We were getting good practice reports about Parker Livingstone from Eric and Justin and the guys. And people are like, so now we don't have to take a transfer. And I was like,
let's hold that.
So that might be a good segue to the fact that even in areas where we're stacked, Connor, edge, we're kicking the tires on a guy that is a potential difference maker out of Stanford.
Yeah. And I'm going to totally shut down your segue there, even though.
Okay.
good work, though. You get anyway,
back to women's basketball.
Yeah. Arch likely has the bond built between Wingo and Moore. Let's get Livingstone, Butler, Lockett, and French, hell, even Washington to get reps and see what's going on. Yeah, I want to see the bottom of the roster get some reps. We also want to see the top line. Because here's the thing, guys. Sark can say he's going to rotate these wide receivers. He's not going to do it. You know, and so it's just like we're going to see a good depth here, but it's not like Sark's suddenly going to be like, okay, second string guy is going to get in a ton. And I mean, he promised to do it last year and he did it early. They did it in the preseason. But once again, it's just going to come down to your top line guys. So you're going to have built depth, but I still want to see the top line guys because those are the guys that are on the field 98% of the time.
Yeah. Before we went on live, you were saying that you wanted Jontae Cook back.
Yes, for sure.
And you said break the bank?
Yes.
Did that happen?
Yeah, for sure.
I disagree. We'll see what the chat says. But I don't know, chat. Do you like Connor? Do you want Jontae Cook back at all costs?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Or do you want to be like me and like move on?
That's who I want in the transfer portal. That's who I've been talking about. What is the funny part is, yeah, people have said like, well, we don't need someone in the transfer portal if we've got these guys. It's like, guys, we did it. We got a second rounder and a first rounder in the transfer portal. Like, well, that's what the caliber of wide receiver we're looking to bring in. We're not looking to bring in like a depth wide receiver. Like, we're looking to bring in a
beyond that. Rounder. DeAndre Moore and Ryan Wingo are on the field. That's like we just demonstrated that injuries happen. So is the season over if we have injuries, or would you rather have a guy that's a stud from another school that we went and got in the portal? And also receiver, like. You don't get worse in your passing game having another very good viable option.
Right.
It's not like, well, what are we going to do with these four outstanding offensive tackles? You know, rotate them? No, I guess, you know, a couple of these guys got to sit. Wide receiver, as long as dudes can do stuff, you can get them out on the field and they can do stuff.
Yeah. He was not a culture fit. Are you kidding me? Of course he was.
He was the culture, man.
That's true. We've just been listless at sea ever since Cook left, dude. I agree. I like Jontae, but he needs to clean up his act, and I don't see Texas putting up with his crap. Yeah. That was Paul being sarcastic, guys. I do not want Jontae Cook back.
Or was I?
It's a shame, though. Man, there's some weird curse with the number one wide receivers in Texas, man. You end up, like, ducking them. It's interesting.
Receivers in general. Not always like the firmest foundation of your football team.
It's so weird, right? Like, how does that route towards a position so commonly?
They are the anti offensive linemen.
I know, exactly. It's so weird. All right, Paul, you want to hit a segue to Edge again, dude? You had a pretty good one.
I had a pretty awesome segue, and then someone shut it down. But I'm gonna open it back up.
Yeah.
So. We are going to be active in the portal. And actually, I have a couple of comments on this. There's a guy named David Bailey out of Stanford. I actually wrote an article on Inside Texas right when Stanford – listen to this sentence. Stanford general manager Andrew Luck fired Troy Taylor in March for being mean, I guess, comma, hires Frank Reich for 1 year.
Yeah.
So that's the current Stanford situation. Because of that, as you guys know, the portal opens automatically – for 30 days. So I scoured the Stanford roster of, are there some guys we might want? And the answer is, yeah, there's actually a couple. And one of them is David Bailey. He's the edge though, which is the weird part because we're pretty loaded at edge, but I will make an argument that edge, like wide receiver, it helps to have extras. It helps to have lots of them because an edge running at 100% playing 30 snaps a game is a very different dude from an edge who's playing 60 snaps, who has to deal with the bumps and bruises of the full game experience. So this guy, David Bailey, he's about 6'3", 245. He's a senior. He already has his degree from Stanford. Very physically mature, very quick, great get off, Connor. Like, so he's an NFL player.
Yeah, I watched his highlights on your article.
Yeah, I mean, you can tell this is an NFL player. And he would be a phenomenal complement to Colin Simmons on like a pure passing down where you just bring heat on both edges.
And they both rush. They just get right around tackles.
And then you got Anthony Hill firing up on a Mike blitz, right? Mm-hmm. So could he be useful for us? Absolutely. More the merrier. Is he essential for us? No. But I will say this. The fact that we are pursuing him suggests to me that our NIL is looking pretty good right now.
Yeah.
Because your thought would be, hey, let's be smart with our resources. This isn't our primary need. Texas is saying, hey, this guy could help us win a game. Let's go get him. And let's sell him on a vision of what it could look like. So I think that is very interesting. It's very telling. The other thing that's going to be hilarious is Texas Tech is involved because they don't have any edge rushers. And because we are involved, that'll get the Texas Tech competitiveness going. Right. So even if we don't get him, Texas Tech is going to overpay for this guy. Yeah. Involved.
There is some bidding war to it, right? Like you might not necessarily – like if you say you got into a bidding – like, you know, A&M wants a guy and you're okay. Yeah. You're going to invite him just so A&M blows NIL resources, loses a depth player, and hope you end up hurting them by losing.
Why not? And it's something I pointed out at the very beginning of NIL. People push back. I think they're doing it less now. But I said, hey, realize that in NIL, this new world, we do have advantages broadly. But if any individual school decides we're in love with this player, we got to have this player, they can outbid Texas. And that's not just OU I'm talking about. I'm talking about Texas Tech. I'm talking about, in the right scenario, U of H could outbid us for a player that we're interested in just because they go all in. And so that is something you got to be aware of with NIL, and particularly this spring NIL window, because there were not a ton of players that came out in the fall. We weren't in the Carson Beck sweepstakes, right?
Yeah.
So you're going to see some bidding wars, and we're going to lose some bidding wars occasionally to schools that will surprise you. I thought we were rich. You know, well, if you're at an auction and you've got $1 million budget and someone next to you has a $200,000 budget, but they really want that grandfather clock, they're going to expend all their budget. And we're like, well, I mean, the clock's not worth that. So that's just how it's going to be.
Yeah, and we have very reasonable roster management. And that's why we found a lot of success too, is like we're not just using our NIL to get three big names that we can market through Lubbock or whatever.
Yeah.
And that matters.
D. Gattis makes a good comment from a conventional analysis, which is edge room is ridiculously stacked. I can't see a Stanford edge coming in and getting real burn. I get it. Does him coming in hurt us? If we've got extra money and we feel good about our NIL budget, he will help us win games. You can never have enough awesome pass rushers sprinting off the edge completely fresh. Like, that's a good thing. So is it a priority? I'd say no. But is a guy that would help us win a game? Absolutely.
You think it's the right move for Bailey, though?
Probably not. But right. It's important he not watch this at all. It's also important none of you send this to him or
don't even say that, dude. That's just good. You're gonna literally elicit them to do it.
Can you imagine this gets clipped and Bailey puts it on his Twitter?
Well, dude, it'll
happen. And then I'm the most hated man in Longhorn sports for a week.
The players and crack me up because they all lie and they're like, coaches do it too. They're like, we don't listen to the media. And then as soon as they win said game, they immediately call out the media that they quote unquote didn't listen to.
Didn't believe in us.
Yeah. And it's like, how would you know that if you guys weren't listening?
I don't read the papers.
Yeah. But also it would be hard to like, dude, if we had a YouTube channel dedicated to just talking about our performance on our YouTube channel, you know, eventually you'd be like, hey man, that's kind of mean, or that's not how it happened, you know?
All right, well, in addition to Bailey, there's another player on the edge, on the offensive side of the football, who we will have interest in, tight end for Stanford. He was a starter last year, caught 40 balls. He's a guy that you should pay attention to. I have not seen him enter the portal yet, so maybe we don't want to get too into it. But he's a guy we might be intrigued by. And we'll see. You know, we'll see if Frank Reich can come in there and get everyone inspired. But the guy's name is Sam Roush. And he's a guy that would help us. So keep your eyes on that guy. Keep his name in your mind.
You can never be the most hated man in Longhorn fandom. That spot is reserved for Ian Boyd. The OU fans. Ian's
OU ability, fans despise him. Yes.
Yeah, dude. Ian's ability with OU fans cracks me up, dude.
Yes. And he
is Ian's temperament.
He leans into it, which just makes it even more fun.
But it's just so funny because, like, Ian is a really unbothered guy. And, like, you know, he knows what he's doing. And OU bites every single time. And it just cracks me up. They see him as, like, a real evil villain.
The funniest thing about Ian is he's 90% of the time completely unaware of what he's doing.
Well, it's – no, he's
doing his thing.
Well, it's yeah.
But with OU, he's realized it's incredibly funny,
right,
to build it up and lean into it.
He's become self-aware. When
Ian writes stuff, he's not trying to be incendiary. He's really not.
Well, Texas football. I think he's leaned into OU a little bit.
Oh, OU 100%. Guilty. Yeah, like, in every other area where he infuriates people, he's just saying what he thinks.
Yeah, that's true. Like in Texas football, he's not leaning into it. That's really his thought process. And he thought about it for a couple of days.
Every now and then, Ian will throw up a Ewers highlight of Ewers not throwing into a, like stepping into a throw. Yeah. And then he'll just leave it there. And then there's 197 comments later.
In
30 minutes, Ian's like, I just was putting up a highlight.
Todd McShay
said this, not me.
I don't agree with that. Yeah, he will do that. Ian's aware of what'll get the board going too. Hey guys, before we keep going, let's hear from Academy Sports and Outdoors.
Days like this, the anticipation's half the fun. The call to adventure. Possibilities in every direction.
Look at that.
The stories you'll bring back. Right. Even the true ones. And always, already, you can't wait until next time. From first catch to biggest catch of the season, this is where it starts. Academy Sports and Outdoors. Have fun out there.
Have fun out there.
Absolutely. And it's finally the weather. Well, it's supposed to be thunderstorms tonight. Every time I think I can have fun out there, the weather says differently right now. But it is what it is. But yes, I'm glad you brought up Ian's tweet there. And the difference between showing one highlight as being untrue is you need to show seven highlights, I guess, as something being true. If you guys aren't on Inside Texas, make sure you go there. $1 for 4 months. You can read Ian's diabolical post there and the
fun is created. Todd McShay put up a highlight illustrating something that I've talked about a lot with viewers, not stepping into a throw, kind of arming it out to the flat, or a deep out, actually. And Todd McShay said, hey, this is – an exemplification of why Ewers stock might have fallen a little bit in some circles. And I mean, it's something I've literally written about 1,000 times. Right. Yeah. And it's just, it elicited all sorts of emotional reactions. And it's just really interesting, you know, that people adopt the players and have certain feelings for them. And they get really upset if you put out even valid criticism. Right.
Yeah.
That the player himself might nod and go, yeah, I could have done better there. You know?
Yeah. Sociologically, it's always fascinating. And quarterbacks specifically.
Yeah. Always.
Like there's something about the quarterback, man, that'll just split the audience. It's very strange. People feel very strong either way, man. It's not just that they're ride or die loyal. It's they can also turn on the quarterback. And so there's this like weird thing with this position. As being like the figurehead of the team, that's super weird.
Well, you'll see splits along really weird lines, right? Yeah. You'll see from Texas, not from Texas.
Yeah,
black, white. Dad played pro football. Dad, you know, scrappy, undersized, like does his best guy. And people make weird divisions. And what's funny is they're not always as straightforward as you'd think, right? You know. Sandman says Paul's the foremost expert on Ewers footwork. It's true. It's true, Sandman. Everyone knows that.
Also, these responses in that thread. He's done so much for Texas, and the fan hate is beyond me. Yeah, there's also like this weird, like say you're like Todd McShay was talking about a specific rep, and he's an NFL guy. He doesn't care what Texas fans think. So right. He's just saying, hey man, this is why Ewers might go X round, and then the responses are like. He got us a Big 12 championship. It's like, well, these aren't mutually excused.
Yeah, Tom McShay doesn't care.
Yeah, it's like these aren't – but it's also – he can have a problem and still have been a good quarterback, did good jobs on the pressers. There's this weird thing that if you question a part of a play, it's like you're impugning their character.
Right.
We're saying they haven't done anything for the university. It's like that's not what's being said. We're just talking about a clip. So there's this weird like – underlying conversation that's occurring the whole time that it's like, we're not actually talking about on-field play here. It's kind of strange.
Well, then you'll see the other extreme is you've got to have the obligatory person who comes in. Everything is seen through the litmus of the quarterback and the quarterback only.
Yeah.
So that's where you get the rocket scientists who are like, say what you want about Eli Manning, but he won the Super Bowl twice.
Right.
And it's like, did he? Because I watched those Super Bowls and the Giants defense was freaking phenomenal.
Well, it is weird with quarterback, right? Because you won't hear someone say, like, say what you want, but Colin Simmons won us a Big 12 championship.
Yes.
We don't think about that with any other position. But it is interesting, like, well, they'll shut down conversation and be like, the quarterback, well, it's like he's one of 11, really one of 22 guys. Like, they do have an outsized impact. I'm not saying quarterbacks don't have an outsized impact. But, yeah, just how we view that position and in the discourse beyond it is very weird. And people get
You're a loser until you're a winner at quarterback. Yeah. Right? Yeah. You're assumed to be a loser until you're a winner.
Yeah. Just because we say his footwork sucks doesn't mean you hate the guy. Yeah. Yeah, it's just such a weird position, and it's never going to change, right? It's just how it is. The quarterback is a weird, weird group. All right. Eric had some notes from yesterday that we covered, but I want to put them through. I want to filter them through Paul Waddington's brain.
Damn right.
So here we go. Arch has been doing really good on play action, but in addition, this is important. He's been taking care of the ball, and he's been checking down when it's the best option presented. How do you feel about that?
That's an evolution. Last year's Arch was not check down Arch. Last year's Arch was like,
hell yeah, let's go.
Let's go. Let's go deep, baby.
Yeah.
Double coverage, I can fit it in. It's going to be fine. Yeah. So, yeah, I think that's a good thing. To add to his repertoire, because Arch just gives you a lot of outs. And what I mean by that is if you've got the called play down the field, it's not quite there. He could check down. He can use his legs to either extend on that play down the field and see if it will pop open, or he can use his legs to take off running. I mean, he's a big, strong guy. And you know, or he can roll a little in the pocket, drift, let the play develop, and then that running back leaking out is all the more effective as everybody falls back into their zone, right? And so you flip it out to Trey Wisner, and it's an 18-yard gain and not a 3-yard gain. So I think that is really what's going to be interesting and impressive about Arch is managing the repertoire of options. And I don't just mean his options on the field, the skill players. I mean, on every given play, Arch has a bunch of outs. He's got more cards coming off the deal. He's not stuck with his hand the way so many quarterbacks are. And I think that's the exciting thing about him. Now, there's a downside to that for inexperienced quarterbacks, which is the more options you have, the more opportunities you have for mischief, Connor.
Correct.
So
I'm doing some dumb stuff.
You have the opportunity to do dumb things. And part of the growth and development of quarterbacks, and Sark has shown a great deal of tolerance and patience for this, is I have to let him make mistakes on the field. And then Sark will tear his ass when he comes to the sideline, but he wants Arch to make those mistakes because he knows that's the quickest gradient of actually becoming the kind of quarterback we know he can become. He is not going to pull him for throwing a really dumb interception. He's going to tear his ass when he comes to the sideline, and Arch is going to put his head down and like be like, I know. And then Sark will be like, all right, get back out there. And he's going to whack him on the butt and say, get him. And that's how we're going to do it. So we're going to have some lows with Arch, but I think we're going to have a bunch of highs.
Yeah. Yeah. You're going to see a net positive, hopefully. What do you think? Does Arch get better not having two of his starting wide receivers, or is this coping?
That's coping. I mean, you want to throw to the guys you're going to be throwing to in the season. And Moore and Wingo are probably going to be the two guys he throws to the most this year. Don't you think?
Yeah. Yeah. And him and Moore's connection has been strong. Remember that like fade that it was on Instagram. I know you're really hip with Instagram, dude.
Yeah.
But the fade, it was on Instagram like a year ago. So like Arch was throwing with Moore these deep shots a while ago. And then of course Wingo's your number one. And what did Arch told Wingo that like, hey man, you're going to be a star here. Like keep doing your thing last year. And then he lives with Livingstone. So it's like, he has a connection with these guys. So I always just wonder, like, when your guys get taken down, do you get more accurate? Because you have to be like a second string guy. You have to hit him better, you know. So that's my only thing. But I do agree with you. I think it's a form of cope. But that's important. They also mentioned that KJ Lacy looked good in his first couple practices. Not hearing much about Trey Owens because he's kind of in that middle, that disappearing land, middle ground.
KJ will be interested. Be interesting for me because I don't like smaller quarterbacks generally. I just don't. But there are antecedents in the college game of small quarterbacks that are that really they play big, right? And you know, I'm willing to be I'm not going to question Sark on quarterback takes. So that's probably not the best strategy for my success. But I've always been sort of like, you got to show me if you're a smaller quarterback. And I don't just mean height. I mean your frame, your build. You've got to show that you have that durability to stand up there against non-high schoolers, right? It's a different game.
Yeah, it is. But I do think it's interesting that Sark would take a Ewers to a Manning to a Lacy. He's not just prototyping, you know, which I think
first is and foremost, you've got to be able to throw at a certain level. Yeah. It is interesting that Sark recruited Jalen Milroe so hard. He must have seen something in him that I can develop his passing game. And maybe Sark could have. We don't know. But no. It didn't fully evolve at Alabama.
Yeah. But it is. I like it anytime a quarterback coach or whatever takes different guys because there's like some essence he's getting at. And it's got to be more whiteboard. I mean, you have your, like you said, you got to be able to throw. But there's got to be something mentality wise too that they're looking for there if the body types are so diverse.
Yep.
Running back, how you feeling, Paul? Christian Clark is moving well. Picture him also on Instagram. I know you saw that without a brace or anything on. So pretty remarkable recovery there for an Achilles injury. And then we're hearing good things about Jared Gibson. We continue to hear about him. Baxter, of course, not in the mix. And then Wisner. We know what we got with Wisner. So you still taking a running back in the portal?
I would.
Yeah, me too. At this point, we're like stumping, campaigning. Please, someone. Just because we saw it last year. It's funny how we haven't learned our lesson of last year. Like, guys get injured and it changes the complexion of the room, you know? And we're like, hey, we got guys. It's like, well, we just saw it. What happens? You see a wide receiver.
Part of the reason I would take a running back is I don't think there's a great cost to doing it. And also, quality running backs are – you don't have to get them from Alabama and Georgia.
Right.
You can get them from freaking Delta State, Norfolk, you know, like, yeah, I was laughing because and if you look at this Final Four, other than Duke, most of the teams are really old. And most of the teams, like Florida's entire guard group is guys from Belmont, Florida International, and Iona. Like, I think of running backs almost like these mid-major basketball players. Like running backs, just an interesting projection and guys develop physically at different rates. And there's just really good running backs available for cheap playing for App State. And you can go get them because they want to go play. All running backs want to play big time football and show that they can do it at the next level. Yeah. And it's actually imperative for their NFL scout. So, you know, as crazy as it is, Ashton Gentry, who's a really good player, don't get me wrong, but him playing Penn State in a playoff game was much more important than dropping 250 on San Jose
State. Oh, yeah, for a scout, 1,000%.
Yes.
Yeah, and there's a reason why when Georgia and Texas play, the scouts choose that game. You know, they're coming. They want to see those. They want to see.
So why get a running back? Because we could need one. I think we could use one, and they're cheap, and there's a bunch of them. And you can go get a good one from Valdosta State, like a guy you've not even heard of. And he can come in here and be a good quality player for us.
Cool. Eric reports that he hasn't heard much on Jordan Washington beyond taking on more of a leadership role. And Jeff Banks spending a ton of time helping to expedite Washington's readiness for this year. I have clips of the first practice and Jordan Washington Jeff Banks is all over him. And if he messes up a blocking technique, he makes him restart again and go again and go again. but that's as a player that can feel kind of oppressive, but you understand now they're like, hey, man, they think you're the guy. That's why they're spending all this time with you. So yeah, there's a reason.
Weirdly, Jordan Washington, maybe more than anyone, would like another tight end to come in who's viable.
Right.
Have you noticed all the weird Spencer Shannon is going to be our breakout tight end?
Yeah, it was weird. They did it on ESPN. Which
I feel like this is people who don't
read. They're not. They're national guys. They're not. They're national guys. And they went with Spencer Shannon on ESPN. And then another bigger CFB account was like, my pick is Spencer Shannon. My guess is that he just read the ESPN article.
Correct. And
which is even funnier. But I think the logic was this, like, well, Jatavion Sanders broke out and then Helm wasn't, and he broke out. So who's their their oldest tight end? It's Spencer Shannon, without doing the research that it'll be most likely Jordan Washington. So, but that position's big, man. That's going to be an important thing. And his 268 listed weight was incorrect. So it's like,
yeah, he's actually 305.
That's true. He's actually far larger.
Yeah. He's much bigger.
So I guess he's around 250 ish. Which makes sense because when I was watching him catch passes, he moves really well, man.
Yeah.
But tight end's going to be interesting, and people have keyed in on it. Paul talked about it. Tight end's an important position for us to grab in the portal.
Why do you think you pronounce the word interesting?
I don't know if I even do it consistently all the time. I might do interesting, like where it's all.
I've heard you say interesting, but if in other times you say interesting.
Maybe I'm just like far more pretentious at some moments. And so I go with interesting at those moments. I don't know, but now you'll have me thinking about it.
Good. That's the main thing. I want to get in your head so we have a poor product for the fans. Yeah.
Just scared to speak.
That's right.
But tight end, big deal, right? And an injury in that tight end room is going to be pretty catastrophic as well. So that's why we need somebody there depth-wise. Knock on wood.
Don't do that when my dogs are in the room, please.
Yeah, it'll psych them out. Paul, who has the best mortgages in the entire world?
You want to talk about a dog, Connor? I'm talking about a DAWG dog. This guy is a straight-up dog in the financial world, in the mortgage world. His name is Gabe Winslow. Give him a call, 832-557-1095. Connor, once again, that's 832-557-1095. Why would you give this gentleman a call? Well, I'm glad you asked. Over 20 years in the industry, he's phenomenal at what he does. Former National Merit Scholar. Dude has a law degree. This guy's wildly overqualified to be doing your mortgage, but you know what? He loves doing it. He loves giving people the realization of their dream of home ownership or simply a refi. Put a little money in your pocket if you need to. This is a good time to call him. Interest rates are in an interesting spot at the moment. And this is a guy who, even if you know you're not going to buy a house until June or this summer or something like that, wait for the kids to be out of school, give him a call now. Start planning your strategy. He is a guy that the more info you give, the more heads up you give, the more he can help you secure your best possible deal. He's a broker. That means he's going to be aggressively shopping your deal to 70 different lenders. When you go to your big bank where you have your checking account because you're lazy, you don't know how the market works, you're getting shopped to one lender. Who's going to give you a more competitive price in this capitalistic society, Connor? 70 people bidding on your business or one person bidding on your business?
70.
That's correct, Connor. You've done well. And I think it's interesting you answered that so correctly. Give Gabe a call, 832-557-1095.
Number one. I just have a strong sense and understanding of the economy like that, you know? I can just know, hey, 70 is better than one. Offensive line, Paul. We're still...
I think we should play one. I would play five of them.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Because if you play three, I just think even Arch will get sacked.
Yeah, that's true.
That's my thought.
We could try it. Well, we might be playing three. So we're having some questions still left at left guard and at right tackle. Eric has stated that should likely lead to a portal addition. We don't do a lot of portaling with Kyle Flood. But if we're still having questions at left guard and right tackle, getting some veteran leadership in there should be important. So are you on the pick up a lineman train?
Yes.
Profound. What kind of lineman do you want? You want an interior guy? You want a tackle? You don't care?
I would like a guy who will be drafted into the NFL in one of the higher rounds.
Okay. You want like an all-time great?
I would like the equivalent of, I don't know, like Kelvin Banks type player.
Okay. Yeah, that'd be cool.
Just that. Hey, reading some of his draft reports, apparently Kelvin Banks was lucky to like get a scholarship at Texas. So,
one guy, more reps
against future NFL first round edges than any player I can name in college football history, at least recent memory.
Yeah.
And they're like, there's some questions about Kelvin Banks. I'm like, actually, he plays games. And he went against Will Anderson, and he went against all these other guys. And
he did it in high school. He's done it. You know, it's like it's all there. Dude, some of these draft guys, man, they just have to, like, differentiate themselves.
It's just recycled nonsense. They don't know what they're talking about. But, no, I do think we need to get some offensive linemen in the portal. I think at least one. And I think it's going to be based on availability. I did find one guy on the Stanford roster that I thought was somewhat interesting. He was huge. He fit the sort of big body principle that we like to operate off of. And he also started as a true freshman and as a true sophomore. So I think that he's still got upside, and that might be the kind of player that would appeal to us to get in the portal. Or there might be some other more established guys. I think we just have to see what the spring will provide, and we'll find out. But I think offensive line, you've got to create a floor and some competition, because those are guys that sometimes they benefit from having someone drive them a little bit.
Well, that's also like where like an Ivy or, you know, a higher tier university helps, because like it's going to be hard. You're not going to find an NFL body tackle that's already at the top of the sport. They're just going to stay where they're at. You have to find like a guy from Rice, you know, or like a Stanford or something like that. So it's like that's where you'll have to find. You'll have to, and he's going to be more traits than production at that point, or else he's going to be through the roof price wise. So it's like that's what I want to see is. That's why you might end up wanting a guard. I don't know. It's offensive line is a tough kind of portaling position.
I mean, we've seen teams construct their entire offensive line through the portal, and it goes well, and we've seen it not go well. And OU is responsible for both of those two scenarios. I mean, OU is basically rebuilding their offensive line in the portal every year.
And yeah, it's weird.
Last year, it didn't work out great, so – as much respect as Biedenbaugh gets from college football fans and the media and stuff, the fact is his natural recruiting, he's blown that a couple of times, and that's had big consequences for OU football.
I think that's waning. I think he's kind of coasting off some past reputation there because, like you said, lately not killing it. All right. So offensive line, I agree. Tight end. This is always funny. You're talking about, I just want a great player. I'll ask people, you know, do you want a pass block or do you want a blocking tight end? Do you want a receiving tight end? They're like, all around. It's like, well, yeah. I want a guy that can.
Like a Tony Gonzalez kind of guy.
Yeah. It's like, I want Gronk too. But it's like, you're likely going to have to pick or you're going to pay a pretty penny. But so how are you feeling about offense right now? No portal additions. How many wins does this offense get like a defense doesn't exist? With this iteration, you can bring back Baxter, you can bring back Moore, you can bring back Wingo.
Yeah, so I'd say what's the health level and ability level of Christian Clark and Baxter? That'll be a big part of that. And then I need Wingo and Moore to be pristine, like uninjured. Yeah. If we do that, I think it's like a 10-win kind of offense, assuming literally no negatives of injury, stuff like that. So what that means to me is we got to go get some guys. We got to lift our ceiling.
And I do wonder how crazy, like you said, because this was such a weird fall portal. We were expecting a lot of action and nothing happened. So that also means the price, people are going to be more desperate and the prices are going to get driven up. So it's going to be a weird spring portal, I think, college football wide. Defensive line. Let's see what we got here. Oh, the one thing about offensive line that I thought was important, DJ Campbell is stepping up in a leadership role.
There you go.
And there's a clip on the social media, too, of him yelling to get everyone in line. So that's that was interesting to see. Eric doesn't have too much on defensive line because, like we said, they just started padding yesterday and they weren't even full gear yesterday. They were just shoulder pads. So, but they have, like, Travis Shaw, and they, more importantly, Shaw has shown good motor. Right, that was kind of the question about Shaw, like five-star tangibles, but you know, was he going to go hard?
So what that means, translation, in shorts, when they say like ball pursuit drill, he's trying. That's literally what that means.
Yeah.
Like, so yeah, that's good, but like for the big guys, I don't pay attention to anything until pads come on.
Pads come on and they're like 15 reps in.
Yes, yeah. That's exactly right.
And so that's
fatigue the difference. Makes cowards of us all, Connor.
Yeah. And so it's like, that's the difference too. But it's better than the inverse of that he's shown poor motor. So, and then they've also described Hiro Kanu as a great culture fit as a German. So that's even more unique. He's becoming fully American now. God bless him.
Is he sort of a Polynesian German? Is that his thing?
No, he's just German.
He's just German? And his name is Hiro Kanu?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's just German. He came over with, there were like four or five of them like a couple years ago.
He's not like a Moana character.
No, he's German.
All right.
Yeah, you can watch, there's a YouTube little documentary about the group of like the five German players that they all flew over here to try to become NFL players. Pretty interesting. But they would work out at like the NFL Prep Academy over in Europe and stuff. It was interesting. Linebacker.
Good. I think I'm excited about this position.
All eyes have been on Leonga Lefau and Trey Moore. They're both going to play, but it could be scheme and game plan dependent on how much. I don't like this sentence. Lefau is great in coverage and good at linebacker things. To me, sounds like good at linebacker, right? And then Moore is a chess piece who can move around to cause confusion. That sounds like a pass rusher.
Yeah.
So if we have a linebacker that's good in coverage and good at linebacker things, to me, he should play linebacker. And then a guy that can move around chess piece, sometimes in some formations you can do that. But that's just, I'm just going to have to see it with Moore. I'm just going to have to be wrong. Because this seems like we're solving a problem we don't have. And so it's like, that's why I'm trying to figure out why we're even doing this. I get it on like a dime. I get it on a third down package. But man, on first and second down, like why? What do you think, Paul?
I don't know.
We
don't know how they're going to use these folks. So we're going to find out.
Yeah, but give me a little something, man.
Maybe there's a big tie-in in the big picture with David Bailey. Maybe we're running you know how Ian likes to do, we run a 2-4-5, not a 4-3. Right. Maybe we're going to run a true 2-4-5. We're going to have two defensive tackles and four linebackers out there running around like madmen, blitzing, stunning, being fast, being athletic. And you get Bailey, Moore, Hill, Simmons all out there, and they run around like madmen. And then we do a hockey line shift, and we bring out the next guys. So we'll see.
I mean, that is awesome, right? Like if you're just adding, say you add Bailey, you do have Trey Moore. I mean, it's crazy as an offensive coordinator. You like, if you get on third down, it's like a nightmare. But it's almost like we're going, I haven't seen a team that like personnel could be this pass rush heavy probably ever. You know, it's like, it's, if you get David Bailey too, it's like, guys, I feel like we're like, are we even, do we like, that's an insane strategy to me. It's just like, you're just going to,
we're going to zero blitz on every down.
Yeah. We're just pass rushing. You
know, it's going to be third and 27, or they're going to throw a 70 yard touchdown.
Exactly. And so it's like, that's what's funny to me. It's like, dude, we're building like the all-star team of pass rushers, but it's like, that's a, like we said, even half of the game is passes, but only a quarter of that is drop back passing, you know? So it's like, you're spending a lot of stuff for like a quarter potentiality of the game. Ty Anthony Smith and Brad Spence are doing good things. Smith moves like a DB. That's awesome. He's up to 220. That's important. And Spence moves well and filled out his side. We're also forgetting Spence, right? As also a potential pass rusher. It's like, dude, we have so many pass rushers. It's getting a little absurd. But hey,
I honestly wish you could trade players in college football.
Me too. If it wasn't linked to their education,
they're not getting educated.
Yeah. Well, whenever you hear their majors, dude, they crack me up. It's like, what do you plan to do with that one? But also, I went to film school, so I can't really say much.
Right? I was gonna say, as a film school guy, you don't need to be talking trash.
Okay, I don't need to be talking right. Star.
Look at how they use this dolly shot in Star Wars Episode 6. Look at how Jar Jar is being minimized against the larger backdrop.
Dude, yeah, you're like,
you're like having to meet at 7 p.m. to like screen The Godfather.
It's like, it's funny. As far as like hours, like you have your fit, you know, you take 15 hours, but you have to go to like all these screenings and like talks and all this stuff too. So you're like actually like doing work probably like, I don't know, 20, 25 hours a week. But the work, like I said, you're watching Godfather. So it's a pretty sweet. So it's
when you said that Starship Troopers was the finest movie ever made, did that affect your ability to graduate or your thesis?
Well, it is funny because half of like you have like the half that's like very pretentious, right? And then the half that are like anti-pretentious. So they just like they're just reacting to the pretentious. So they like think bad. They'll say bad movies are good. It's like it's this strange.
That's great. Everyone,
it's an opinion culture. And the school is split. You have filmmakers, like people that want to be directors, producers, all of that. But we're grouped in with the critics too.
Oh no, that's the worst. Like
there's this natural, there's like this natural headbutting that occurs, right? Because the critics have no interest in making the stuff, and so they would critique things, and the people that make stuff would be like, "Well, you're this is why they did this, and there's actually a physical limitation here. Like we don't have the technology to do what you're saying."
Instead of Robert Downey Jr. doing that with CGI, why don't you just have him wear the iron suit and shoot lasers? Right.
Yeah, there's like there, but exactly. There's like conversations having there where the critics are critiquing things. We're like, hey guys, this we are following the laws of physics. But it was weird to have the film creators and then the critics in the same room because it leads to this natural tension. So this is interesting with Star. And Jelani McDonald continues to stay at safety because Derek's hurt, but also Eric, I think Eric said that, you know, Ryan, or he's not too keen on playing Star. He'd rather play safety. Especially after seeing what Makuba was able to do. And I'm good with him at safety too. But Eric's been hearing about Wardell Mack and Ryan Niblett at nickel. But what's interesting is the variations. They've also been hearing about true freshman Grayson Littleton, Jonathan Cunningham, who we brought in as an, like an edge, like a 3-4 linebacker. So the body differences there is interesting. So it's like, once again, I think Nansen's coming to game plan, guys.
Yup.
But what you and Ian have been begging for a couple of years about game plan specific, it seems like that.
It's happening.
But we'll have to see.
We're going to run the 2-9, man.
Finally, baby. Finally. And then another one that was interesting at cornerback, Santana Wilson, has got a couple interceptions. They're working hard on Jalen Gilbo. They're going hard on Jalen Gilbo. It's just kind of like a Jordan Washington thing. They're making sure that he's good there. He's getting up to speed at the position. And then we haven't heard much about Muhammad or Black. So it's early spring ball stuff, right? You're hearing. What do you want to hear by the end of spring ball about Jalen Gilbo? Starting corner?
Starting corner and fast enough to turn and run with wide receivers, not just keep guys in front of them and make the tackle.
Yeah. That's the tricky part.
I question his pure foot speed.
Yeah.
That I would like to be reassured on that.
Yeah. I'll race him and I'll be able to figure it out.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh yeah, Paul, what was your major?
History.
History.
And I was a business foundations minor. Did you guys have the business
foundation? Yeah, I did the minor at the business school at McCombs. Yeah.
I did that. So I can read a spreadsheet. I know elementary finance. Yep. I understand what gap accounting is.
Yep.
Other than that, not super useful. But yeah, I was a history major, which is helpful for reading lots and writing a lot and disseminating ideas.
You made fun of me, by the way. What, did you go work at the history factory afterwards?
No, I immediately went into sales.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. You did all right for yourself. Didn't Ian do history too?
Yes.
You are both history majors.
Yeah. So that's more of an indictment on the major.
On the program. Sam, man.
Yeah, we compared notes. We found out we had the same professor, the same Roman history professor. It's a British guy named Gwyn Morgan who wore the same outfit every day.
Yeah.
And in true British fashion, he had some need for dentistry, maybe. But excellent professor, very sarcastic, and would talk about Roman events as if these were his neighbors and his friends. Mm-hmm. And so if I said something like, well, you know, in some ways, maybe Julius Caesar was justified. The Republic, you know, the Senate had gotten corrupt. And does tyranny matter whether it's one man or 500 men, right?
Yeah.
Oh, how dare! And he'd go off and like berate you for it and then like wink at you at the end. But he was a great professor. I had a lot of really good teachers at UT.
A good history professor is going to be awesome because they're like
the tough thing, and it's so sad because I feel like a lot of people get the high school football coach as their history professor or teacher in high school,
yeah.
And then he like reads out of the textbook to the class. And history can be so awesome and so cool and so like fascinating. Like the real stories of history are beyond anything. Like Cortez conquering the Aztecs is beyond anything that you could write in a script or a movie screen. And if you did write it, people would be like, this is very unrealistic. Like, this is not possible that 600 Spaniards could conquer this massive nation.
Well, it changes your worldview. And a good history professor is like a storyteller, a philosopher, a politician. It's like everything rolled into one.
That's so
a good one's, a good one's awesome.
Yeah, if you're teaching dates and just facts, that's not history. That's a... Right. That's a madrasa. Not useful.
Sandman was in sports management, and then he got his master's in organizational leadership and policy. Yet I work in tech. Yeah, it's fine. Dude, you just need the degree. They don't care what it's in unless you're in some hyper-specific field. It's just like they basically pass-fail you. Business Foundation Program certificate, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. I have a certificate somewhere. I think I threw it away.
Yeah. I was like, I don't even know where my certificate is. All right. We're hearing, guess what, dude? Shocking. We're hearing Michael Taff is a leader of the defense.
Is he really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's cool. Well, I'm glad he's not just resting on his talent and he's actually like trying and like trying to learn the game.
I do. He's going to be so important for us, man. He's going to be.
Having one dude who can line everybody up. Look, y'all are going to laugh, but coaching youth football, I now understand the coach on the field.
Yeah.
Because to be able in shorthand to yell something in from the sideline to make an adjustment to the one kid who gets it and can get everyone lined up or adjusted, it's everything as a football coach. Even when you're coaching little kids in pads or flag football, having that one baller, high football IQ kid at safety or linebacker or whatever, just being able to yell something into him because you see something obvious that's about to happen. And he doesn't just look at you and go, "Oh," like, you know, he actually grabs other players and throws them over there. I mean, it is massive. And so I will never make fun of a coach ever again for a coach on the field. It's one of those things until you coach, you don't fully appreciate.
It's a cliche for a reason.
It is a cliche for a reason. It really is. And people are like, well, the freshman behind him is a tenth faster in the 40 and he's 2 inches taller. And it's like,
he's a six star.
It's like, dude, you've got to have that guy out there who can just.
That was Taff. Remember all last offseason we made a joke of how it sounded like Taff was paying us because we were trying to say like he's not going to get jumped because everyone's like we have Derek Williams, we have this guy, and we're like, guys, we're trying to tell you, like, and also players that make coaches look good stay on the field.
Yes.
Like, it's just
because sometimes players, you send in your brilliant play call and it's clear that it ain't good. And if you have a player on the field who can check out of it before you even are yelling and screaming at the sideline because they're running no huddle, boy, that's invaluable. And they will save your ass and you'll be indebted to that player forever. So, yeah. And by the way, Taff actually is talented. So he can run and jump and he's got good anticipation. He's quick. He doesn't mind giving up his body.
Yeah.
And you got to get him a little bigger for the car crashes.
Correct. Right? Yeah. We do need to get size on him, especially for the NFL. And then Eric hasn't heard much about special teams. He says, we're lucky to get who we can on the phone for info. So spending time on special teams for the first week isn't smart.
Well, I'll tell you this. Banks reviewed the season last year. I guarantee you he's pissed.
Yeah.
Because his special teams in some key areas, not just the kickers, kind of sucked.
It went down just like across the board.
Well, and we had Matthew Golden returning kickoffs. We should have brought a couple back.
Yeah.
And he knows that. And that's on him. It's not on him when Bert Auburn misses a field goal. There's not a lot you can do once you anoint your kicker. Like, there's no magic for that. But the actual schematics of special teams, punt coverage, punt return, kick coverage, our coverage teams are always good. Our return game sucked. And
our punt block.
How he schemed it up sucked. And he knows that, and he's embarrassed. And I bet he's coaching pissed.
I need to, like, study. I can't even tell schematically if we're doing anything. I'm so basic on special teams, I have to look at the result.
You know,
which is not what you want to be. You want to be able to understand the schematics. But
are you going to miss little Silas Bolden, the maniac, returning punts? Making it fun?
It'd make you feel alive, dude.
He makes you feel alive.
Dude, and he had remarkable hands. Like, he was able to do that. But, man, what a terrifying player. Also, a player that bums me out.
Yeah, I feel like we could have gotten more.
We could have gotten more there.
There's meat left on that bone.
Yeah. Could have gotten more there. And part of, I think, his kamikaze punt return style was because he was so thirsty, you know, to make something happen.
He is a random dude on Instagram when a woman who's a 7 puts up her bikini pic.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's like,
nice.
You're the nice with 3 eyes. Or he'll do the, like, you are the most beautiful woman in the world to me. It's like, dude, like,
relax. It's always some, like, 70-year-old dad that's just, like, lonely. He's like, very pretty girl.
Or some guy from Bangalore.
Yeah, that's true. But it is hilarious. I would like to see the one time that worked out where the model was like, you know
you what? Think she instantly DMs that guy?
One time the model's like,
hey, I just got a vibe off you.
I picked you from the one of the 700.
I like the picture of your ATV in your profile.
That's true. Oh, you hunt deer. But yeah.
I didn't realize you hunt dove.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. All right, guys. Thanks for joining us on this show. This was brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors. I picked the wrong overlay after the break. But you guys know Academy is the number one spot. Get your shopping done all for spring. Get your fishing gear. Get your running gear. As the sun comes out, guys. You guys need to go to Academy Sports and Outdoors. And this was brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors. Paul, thank you so much.
Thank you. Go to Academy and call Gabe.
Absolutely.